My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Benton Standing's with us on this show as our Washington Insider every Monday and Friday right around now, 12 noon Eastern. Follow Ben on Twitter at Ben Standing. Listen to his podcast, Standing Room Only, anywhere you get a podcast. And subscribe to The Athletic, where Ben writes and writes a lot and does it very well. Do we have more questions after this offseason? Fewer questions or the same amount when it comes to the offensive line?
Oh, good question. I guess it depends how one views, say, Andrew Wiley, for people who were thinking he needed to be replaced, which I never really thought was going to happen. So I would say fewer questions in the sense that, okay, they signed Tyler Biadasz. They signed Nick Allegretti. We still have to see a guy who was the backup in Kansas City, how he emerges as a starter. But obviously he played in the playoffs and played at a pretty good level. So I think the left tackle spot remains the one question and a big one. But, you know, they did draft Brandon Coleman, and to whatever degree they think he's able to play this year may go a long way towards addressing that question. But that's, I guess broadly I'd say less, but the one that's still out there is, you know, I think reasonably still a significant question.
Don't you have less, though, just to start with, given the change in quarterback and the change in offensive coordinator, or not?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, yes. I mean, so much last year was just, you know, as we look back on it now, it almost is like, wow, that wasn't a fever dream, right? They really had a coordinator come in who seemed to want to run an offense as if the quarterback he had was some experienced vet as opposed to a guy with one career start. And then the quarterback himself, while he showed some good promise, clearly was holding onto the ball too long, leading to a lot of these sacks, et cetera. So, yeah, I think from those perspectives, sure. Now, granted, Jaden Daniels had a very high pressure-to-sack ratio in college, and that's going to be something we're going to have to see how that evolves over time. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, if nothing else, there's more optimism with the Kingsbury Daniels combination than there was last year with the Bienemy Howell one, for sure.
Let me just mention, because I spent multiple, you know, shows talking about the pressure to sack percentage number on Jaden Daniels leading up to the draft. Let me just tell you something that I know for sure. The analytics people in the organization, it didn't bother them at all. There's a lot of context around those numbers, not to mention that it improved significantly in his final season. But I know for a fact the analytics people with this organization were not concerned about pressure to sack percentage. They saw a lot of what we taught and what we've talked about on this show going back before the draft, that there was a ton of context around a lot of that. Hey, last week, Dan Quinn mentioned, you know, kind of the flexibility and the versatility of some of the defensive players. And then he just threw in that, you know, we got some wide receivers that are lining up in the backfield. And I with you on Friday, I think we tried to discuss this. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else. But several people tweeted me and said, Luke McCaffrey's the one that's been lining up in the backfield as a running back. I find that interesting. He's their tallest receiver. I know what his brother is as a running back, but do you know much about Luke McCaffrey being a guy that they could use out of the backfield?
I mean, they were giving him some handoffs sort of in like on the side and position drills. I don't know how much I was seeing him like getting that kind of work in like sevens or 11s. But, you know, again, obviously all that is just trying to get a feel for anything. Look, to quote Kevin Garnett, you know, anything is possible. I think right now when it comes to this offense.
You didn't say it with so much enthusiasm like you just did.
No, I agree. I got to dial it down. McCaffrey is he was a former quarterback, so he's going to have some of those scrambling chops by nature, and you know the opportunity to put the ball in the hands of your playmakers in any way, shape or form makes some sense. So sure, I mean, again, this is the whole theme really of this offseason program. Is to study each player and get a feel for what they can offer so that when they go make game plans moving forward, they can determine, hey, if we want to have a play where, you know, it's not like we don't see plays where wide receivers get the ball out of the backfield, who can do that for us? Last year, Curtis Samuel was getting a lot of those. Terry McLaurin's never been that guy, right? Jahan Dotson hasn't been that guy. So maybe, hey, can this guy who was a former quarterback do some of that for us? So, you know, they're taking a look at it all. And, beyond that, you know, we'll see. I mean, D'Ami Brown hasn't done that here. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like, oh, this is obvious that they were going to do this, but sure, I kind of understand if they want to, again, just sort of test the limits of everybody that McCaffrey could make some sense in that regard.
Anything is possible. This is true. So let's talk some Jaden Daniels here for a moment. Are there target dates? Are there things that you're thinking about in terms of, you know, when Dan Quinn says he's our starter, when he starts taking every first team rep when we get to training camp? Does he start the first preseason game as the starter? Just give me some key kind of target dates and your guesses on some of those big things before what I think we all believe, or most of us believe, will be a week one start at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I actually asked Tavita Pritchard this, I guess like 2 weeks ago we had access to the assistants. I'm like, is there a point where you're like, okay, on this date, I'm very curious to see, knowing what we're going to be doing, what we're going to, you know, installing or working on in practice. On this date, I am very fascinated to see where Jaden Daniels is. And he said, well, that's a really interesting question. And then remember, he's not the offensive coordinator, and said, that's probably a better question for Cliff Kingsbury. So he didn't give me a great answer. Here's my guess. My guess is Jaden Daniels is going to get all the QB1 duties from here on out, unless he has a major setback or something like that. He handled the QB1 duties essentially this last 3 days in minicamp, and I don't really see any reason to think it's going backwards. Like, there's, you know, again, I don't want to assume too much, but I don't really think there's any competition here, even if Dan Quinn's going to say that. No matter, every time we ask about anybody starting, that's the term they're coming up with, and, you know, it's good coach speak, but I just think Daniels is going to be, you know, the guy going forward. He's got to get the work in. You know, I mean, like last year, you know, Ron Rivera had already sort of pot committed to Sam Howell 10 seconds after the previous season ended. So even though Jacoby Brissett, clearly the more experienced guy, you know, there was never even much of a debate there as what was going to happen here. You know, Mariota, you know, he's obviously more experienced as well, but I don't think anybody's looking at Marcus Mariota as a potential starter, or at least Brissett was sort of, you know, on that line of, if you want to start him, you can. So I don't really, you know, unless it's just sort of quasi for show, or, you know, just to make sure Mariota is prepared as possible should he ever have to play. I just imagine it's Daniels in QB1 in all facets going forward.
You know what's interesting is Jacoby Brissett in New England, and I read in The Athletic, there was kind of a summary. You had one for Washington, and the New England summary is Jacoby Brissett is the starting quarterback. He took every single first-team rep with Drake May there. Like, they're not they're not pushing it with Drake May. There's Jacoby Brissett with another North Carolina quarterback, one that was drafted 3 overall and has one less start than Sam Howell did at the NFL level a year ago. And New England's not messing around. Jacoby Brissett's going to be the starting quarterback in New England. How about the other rookies? We didn't hear a lot during these OTAs or mandatory minicamp, you know, not since rookie minicamp, but how have the other rookies, shown so far? Obviously, Johnny Newton, not a part of that, and I will ask you for an update, but who stood out? You know, San Ristil, Sinnott, Coleman, McCaffrey, McGee, you know, the Hampton, John Baptiste, you know, maybe even an undrafted free agent. Who were people out there kind of taking notice of?
Yeah, I think Ben Sinnott, he caught my eye a couple times of working in the red zone, catching, some passes in that range. You know, his versatility is a huge part of his portfolio, the ability to play, not just be a pass catcher, but be a fullback, be a more traditional tight end. And, you know, I do feel like the two tight end set is going to be, you know, I'm not saying necessarily the predominant look, but, you know, when you consider some of the questions on the offensive line, probably a desire to run the ball a fair amount, even if it's just to set up the play action, having two tight ends can make sense. And, you know, you have Ertz, you have John Bates, but, I think Sinnott, you know, they drafted him for a reason, and I think he's going to be out there, I would think, a decent amount. Jordan McGee, you know, I've said this before, one of the challenges with this offseason program for me compared to others has been there's no baseline out there. I can't assume anything because everything is different. New coaching staff, half the roster is gone.
Right.
So like, when I'm looking anywhere, I'm like, okay, like last year, do I really have to watch the defensive line a ton? Not really, right? I mean, we kind of know what's going on there. Here, you have to kind of watch everything. So it's kind of hard to see exactly how everybody's doing at all times. But I did notice Jordan McGee a couple of times, you know, in terms of just his, when he was moving towards the pocket, being a pretty aggressive player there. And I've heard of a lot of good things in general from out, you know, including from people like this, you know, from the pre-draft aspect of it, really like him. So I think Jordan McGee, like, this is a bit of a wild speculation, but knowing he's going to be like the backup for Bobby Wagner, I kind of view him as like sort of the third linebacker right now with Jamin Davis in this sort of, you know,
pass,
I don't know what he is.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually a pretty key deal, because if Jamin Davis isn't the third linebacker, I don't really know what his role is exactly and what that even means for him longer, you know, into this season. So McGee, I think, has stood out. I think Sanders still has been, he's shown some good things that, you know, again, with the passing, obviously the defense in general has the edge over offense this early, but in the passing game, you know, when it's just purely a one-on-one, the receivers have an edge. But, you know, I think with Sanders still, you can, you know, see some of the fight, some of the determination with him. That is part of why they drafted a guy like that beyond making plays. So I think those are some of the guys that stood out. I will say there was one play where somebody threw a pass to Armani Rogers over the middle and he caught it and he got thumped. Like, it wasn't like, you know, it's not a play that they're going to have to, the league office is going to cry over excessive hitting, but just like, you know, some contact. And I was like, ooh, who made that one? And it was Dominic Hampton, who to me feels like a poster child for the type of defensive back that this coaching staff is from Dallas, you know, found success with. A guy's got some good size. He and Jeremy Chinn are basically, the physical dimensions are the exact same, 6'3", 220. And, I think that's a guy that they are pretty interested in seeing how it plays out because of their success turning sort of random defensive backs into legit rotation players.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Forrest essentially was picked in the exact same round, right? Somewhere around there. Last regime. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about fifth rounders when you're talking about McGee and Hampton. And we see those end up becoming players in the NFL all the time. We're talking to Ben Standig, of course. So you watched that Commander Log episode three, the draft, the three-day draft episode, correct?
Yes.
What did you think of it? I talked about it earlier in the show. I thought it was well done. I thought there were, you know, some ways that I mentioned, but I want to hear what yours were.
Yeah, I love those behind the scenes videos. You know, the production was fine. You know, you see things like this and you realize why Hard Knocks doesn't seem to resonate as much anymore, because we get these things from the teams pretty regularly. So, but yeah, I thought it was well done. And, you know, you get some interesting notes here and there about, you know, what they're thinking in the moment. Of course, they're also editing out what they're thinking. We saw nothing about the potential trades into the first round, right, for an offensive tackle. So, you know, who
That's
knows what
true.
Else.
That, good observation. But we had heard that there was interest. Well, I mean, Peters basically implied that, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm saying we saw nothing about how that went
nothing
down.
Nothing on that. Right.
Right. So, you know, it's all, you got to remember the editing.
Oh, that would have been actually the most interesting thing. I totally forgot about that. If they had included the attempt to get back into the first round on night one. I wonder why they excluded that.
Well, you know, I guess probably
you know
they don't want to, you know.
Do you know why? Because a player was probably involved.
Well, that, or, you know, they're saying certain things about why they want to do what they want to do, right? I mean, they, you know, if they're trying to get an offensive tackle, then they're saying, hey, we really got to do this, or who knows? Also, they ultimately landed on Brandon Coleman, so they did get somebody, and I'm sure they're going to say, you know, he was high on their board and all that stuff. But the fun part there could be if one of the other teams out there that they were talking to puts out their own video and shows how they decided, you know, similar to how we saw Adam Peters interact with Howie Roseman for the trade that did happen. Maybe some of those teams say, we had this opportunity. Do we want to do it or whatever? But I think the thing that was the most interesting to me was sort of seeing everybody in their, I mean, I know they know the camera's on them, but there's too much happening in real time to be acting for the camera. So I think that we got to see a lot of these people kind of be who they are, fill in the role that we perceive them to be. I mean, Adam Peters clearly in charge without question. Right. And he's pretty calm. It seems like in these moments, he's kind of almost like having a good time. Like, you know, he's making jokes. He's freaking everybody out when he says they clearly want to take Sanders still. He finds out that the team before them is picking a Michigan player. And he tells everybody, they're taking Michigan defensive tackle. He found it so amusing. He did it once to Newmark and Josh Harris. Then he does it again a few minutes later to Dan Quinn. And Dan Quinn like seems like he's going to have a heart attack while it's happening. So I thought that was interesting. The owner aspect, of course, is key here. Josh Harris is in the room. I know there are people who don't even want the owner in the room. That's insane. He owns the team. He's going to be in the room. But Josh Harris was very – he was interested in what is happening. At one point, like, Peters is, you know, talking to another team about something. I think it was maybe a trade in one direction or another. And Harris is asking, so what's the deal now? You're waiting for them to call you back, or do you call them, or how does that work? And then the most notable one was when they're getting ready to draft Ben Sinnott, and Harris says sort of adorably, hey, is there going to be enough, you know, snaps for him to play because we've got Zach Ertz? And it's kind of like, wow. Right. Obviously, Zach Ertz is at best a one-year deal here, and Benson is the longer-term play. But yeah, it was, you know, to see the interaction.
Did you refer to that as adorable? Why? Because he didn't understand that, you know, that a lot of teams put two tight ends out on the field at the same time.
Well, yeah, I mean, look. At the end of the day, you know, prior to a year ago, Josh Harris was a fan of the team. He wasn't owning the team, so he's watching this as many people do. Why, you know, should they do this? How is that going to work? The same people who, you know, again, obviously I'm not comparing Josh Harris to everybody who's emailing you all the time and saying, Kevin, what about this? But like, to an extent, that's kind of how it was, right? I mean, he's a fan of the team. He's not in the team. Now, all of a sudden, he goes from a fan to being in the literal draft war room. So he's asking, hey, how does this work? And he told us, you know, back when he bought the team or around that time, like, hey, I'm going to be in the room, just like I am with the Sixers and I guess the Devils maybe. But, like, I'm not going to be putting my thumb on the scale, but I want to know what's going on. I want these guys to explain it to me. So I just thought it was fun to see that aspect of him. And, you know,
I mean, he's in the room, like he's hovering. And I say that it's just because it's what he's doing. I don't mean that in a way in which he's intrusive at all, because that's not what comes out of this 50-minute video out of hours and hours and hours of the draft. But yeah, I mean, he wants to know what's going on. And I thought Adam Peters does a really good job of being focused, because you got to be focused that night. Things are happening quickly. I mean, when they picked Sandra still and they got him, they're on the clock, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes later with number 53. And, you know, I bet you there's some that would say, Jesus, can we take the owner over here and let him try some of these, you know, these really good brownies that that Mrs. Peters made. But he handled it well. I mean, I thought Adam Peters just came off as a guy that's got some chops in that moment, more so than almost anybody else in the room.
Yeah, no, he just looks very smooth and very comfortable. And, you know, I know we focus
soft-spoken,
so much on,
by the way, soft-spoken.
Yeah, I know we focus typically on, we judge these GMs by, like, you know, the moves that they actually make. But there is something to be said for being, you know, we talk about being leader of men, but, like, being the tone setter of the situation. You know, he is, putting the owner aside, Adam Peters is the one, the top of the overall Washington Commanders football, tree right now, whatever. He's the one setting the tone, including for the coach. Now, Dan Quinn's in charge of the football side, but it's Adam Peters who's, whether it's showing calm as he did or if it's showing tension, that's going to be felt through everybody else and trickle down. So he does a good job of it, as we see in this video, of being in the moment, not, you know, he's taking it seriously, but he's also still finding times to make some jokes, whatever. And it also, you know, seemed to be a pretty inclusive deal. It's not just him and Lance Newmark huddling up the whole time. It's, you know, he's talking to this, talking to that.
Yes.
They bring Kingsbury over at one point,
right,
which is also to show that Kingsbury's involved, but not too involved with this. So I think Peters definitely, from a tone-setting standpoint, did a really good job. Obviously, we'll see over time if the execution worked. But in terms of what was happening in the moment, yeah, he seemed to be – it was a pretty good look for him, I thought.
Yeah, there's a very with Peters, I mean, this was noticeable in his first interview. There's a very kind of Northern California, Silicon Valley kind of attitude. And, you know, for the lack of a better description, polish, I would say, as well to him. Let me just, your observation was the best one. And clearly there's probably a lot of video on Washington, you know, trying to trade back up into the first round to take, you know, a tackle in the draft. That would have been interesting to see. But I think, you know, your point is a good one. It's not just, you know, it's not just if maybe a player is going to be involved in the trade. You would not want that player to know. But it's that, hey, we're desperate for a left tackle. And, the, you know, what does that say about, you know, Lucas and the rest of them? So I guess, but we could see that somewhere else. We could see that on, who was, I'm trying to think, who were they talking to? Do you remember who they were talking to in the first round? Because the last tackle taken was the Arizona kid that you're, no, the Oklahoma kid that you said before the draft they liked.
Yeah, Tyler Guyton went to Dallas after Dallas traded down a little bit. I had heard they went all the way up into the, like, sort of the middle of the first round to try to talk to a team or two, and then, you know,
was
sort
it
of
Mims, the guy from who was it that you think they were targeting? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, Mims to me was the one that made the most sense, because just listening to teams talk about him, it was like, okay, he hasn't played a ton, but what we've seen is pretty outlandish, and that seemed to be the guy that made the most sense, where the other lineman after him is where he started getting more questions, you know, can they play tackle ultimately, and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, I think Mims was the one that it made sense to me, and that's why moving in potentially the middle of the first round, because, right, he ultimately went to the Bengals, right, at,
yeah,
I think that's right, at 18. So that, and that, and that had, that's one of those where it seemed very plausible that that may, it may be what happened. So, yeah, I think him, but yes, if they continue to look into trading in the first round, which it sounds like they did, then, yeah, then you're looking at your Guyton's and your Jordan Morgans as well.
Did you pick up on that right before the McCaffrey pick? You know, when Cameron Kitchens gets picked by the Rams and he says, Adam Peters says, they didn't make it any easier. They both play the way we want them to play. I'm wondering if that guy Kitchens hadn't been picked at 99 and he were available at 100, if he would have been the pick. I don't know. But I thought that was an interesting thing, too. Like, they had a couple of players there, including McCaffrey, that they seemed to be interested in.
Yeah, and this is why, even though the Hard Knocks thing is heavily edited as well, this is why having an outside company do it, to an extent, I say outside, I mean, you know, it's still the NFL, but like having somebody outside of the team's own editors put this thing together, because, right, there was at least once or twice where they mentioned possibly like eyeing like two different players at a pick, but yeah, we never hear who the other one is. And, right, you know, that's the stuff that is as interesting as anything else.
So I agree.
For our purposes, to compare, well, they could have had this, they could have gone down this road, and they didn't, or what have you. So, yeah, so it would be great if we had that, but
Sanders still, they were super excited about, but I don't think there's any doubt, because you see the exchange between Lance Newmark and Adam Peters when the Falcons take the defensive tackle from Clemson at 35, and they know they're going to get Johnny Newton, because that really was clearly a guy, when they entered night two, they're like, if this guy's there at 36, we're going to feel like we stole one. And I think they feel like they did. Now he's hurt, and we'll see what happens in terms of readiness for training camp. But I thought that that just confirmed what we all thought, which was this was clearly the highest guy on their board at that moment, and they were really excited that he was there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that you know, again, some of this can occasionally feel manufactured, but this one, based on what we had already known and yeah, what we see, didn't. And there was, right, there was even some talk we saw in film about them even considering trading up, but ultimately, obviously, playing it out and citing they didn't have to. So, yeah.
Well, I thought the conversation was with Roseman at 36. There, obviously, the conversation with Roseman at 40, which was the one that results in Adam Peters saying, you're a pain in the ass. But at 36, I think they might be on the phone with Roseman, too, who's trying to get up. But they want – he, because that's when he says, no, we're going to stick here and make the pick. If Newton had gone at 35 – to Atlanta, maybe Washington would have dealt 36 to Philadelphia. That's the way I took it. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, I was in play too. By the way, like, you know, we focused so much on Atlanta's draft because of the Michael Penix pick. You know, I had forgotten that they took a defensive tackle before,
right,
Johnny Newton, which, you know, again, we'll see over time, but in terms of just the pre-draft ranking, that was, you know, Newton was being viewed as a,
right,
you know, sort of late first, early second.
Well, maybe Atlanta knew about the foot injury.
Maybe. I mean, look, obviously everybody has their own, yeah, opinions and what they're looking to do on defense. Maybe this other guy was a better fit. But, yeah, just in terms of positioning, Newton was at, you know, seemingly the whole time, right, rated as, you know, top 2-3 defensive tackle.
All right, I got to go. Real quickly, actually, Newton, in time for training camp or not?
They've said it's unclear, so
okay.
I have no idea, but obviously, all they're right, going to take their time with it one way or the other.
I got to roll. Thanks.
See ya.
All right, Ben Standing, everybody. You're going to hear Eric Flack from WUSA Channel 9 next on this D.C. sports study, which was done to determine the economic viability of bringing a stadium back to D.C. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, theteam980.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Ben Standing's with us on this show as our Washington Insider every Monday and Friday right around now, 12 noon Eastern. Follow Ben on Twitter at Ben Standing. Listen to his podcast, Standing Room Only, anywhere you get a podcast, and subscribe to The Athletic, where Ben writes and writes a lot and does it very well. Do we have more questions after this offseason? Fewer questions or the same amount when it comes to the offensive line?
Oh, good question. I guess it depends how one views, say, Andrew Wiley, for people who were thinking like he needed to be replaced, which I never really thought was going to happen. So I would say fewer questions in the sense that, okay, they signed Tyler Biadasz. They signed Nick Allegretti. We still have to see a guy who was the backup in Kansas City, how he emerges as a starter. But obviously he played in the playoffs and played at a pretty good level. So I think the left tackle spot remains the one question and a big one. But, you know, they did draft Brandon Coleman, and to whatever degree they think he's able to play this year may go a long way towards addressing that question. But that's, I guess broadly I'd say less, but the one that's still out there is, you know, I think reasonably still a significant question.
Don't you have less, though, just to start with, given the change in quarterback and the change in offensive coordinator, or not?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, yes. I mean, so much last year was just, you know, as we look back on it now, it almost is like, wow, that wasn't a fever dream, right? They really had a coordinator come in who seemed to want to run an offense as if the quarterback he had was some experienced vet as opposed to a guy with one career start. And then the quarterback himself, while he showed some good promise, clearly was holding onto the ball too long, leading to a lot of these sacks, et cetera. So, yeah, I think from those perspectives, sure. Now, granted, Jaden Daniels had a very high pressure to sack ratio in college, and that's going to be something we're going to have to see how that evolves over time. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, there's just, if nothing else, there's more optimism with the Kingsbury Daniels combination than there was last year with the Bienemy Howell one, for sure.
Let me just mention, because I spent multiple, you know, shows talking about the pressure to sack percentage number on Jaden Daniels leading up to the draft. Let me just tell you something that I know for sure. The analytics people in the organization, it didn't bother them at all. There's a lot of context around those numbers, not to mention that it improved significantly in his final season. But I know for a fact the analytics people with this organization were not concerned about pressure to sack percentage. They saw a lot of what we taught and what we've talked about on this show going back before the draft, that there was a ton of context around a lot of that. Hey, last week, Dan Quinn mentioned, you know, kind of the flexibility and the versatility of some of the defensive players. And then he just threw in that, you know, we got some wide receivers that are lining up in the backfield. And I, with you on Friday, I think we tried to discuss this. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else. But several people tweeted me and said, Luke McCaffrey's the one that's been lining up in the backfield as a running back. I find that interesting. He's their tallest receiver. I know what his brother is as a running back, but do you know much about Luke McCaffrey being a guy that they could use out of the backfield?
I mean, they were giving him some handoffs sort of in, like, on the side and position drills. I don't know how much I was seeing him, like, getting that kind of work in like sevens or 11s. But, you know, again, obviously all that is just trying to get a feel for anything. Look, to quote Kevin Garnett, you know, anything is possible. I think right now when it comes to this
you
offense.
You didn't say it with so much enthusiasm like you just did.
No, I agree. I got to dial it down. Look, McCaffrey is he was a former quarterback, so he's going to have some of those scrambling chops by nature, and you know the opportunity to put the ball in the hands of your playmakers in any way, shape, or form makes some sense. So sure, I mean, again, this is the whole theme really of this offseason program, is to study each player and get a feel for what they can offer, so that when they go make game plans moving forward, they can determine, hey, if we want to have a play where, you know, it's not like we don't see plays where wide receivers get the ball out of the backfield, who can do that for us? Last year, Curtis Samuel was getting a lot of those. Terry McLaurin's never been that guy, right? Jahan Dotson hasn't been that guy. So maybe, hey, can this guy who was a former quarterback do some of that for us? So, you know, they're taking a look at it all. And, beyond that, you know, we'll see. I mean, Deami Brown hasn't done that here. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like, oh, this is obvious that they were going to do this, but sure, I kind of understand if they want to, again, just sort of test the limits of everybody, that McCaffrey could make some sense in that regard.
Anything is possible. This is true. So let's talk some Jaden Daniels here for a moment. Are there target dates? Are there things that you're thinking about in terms of, you know, when Dan Quinn says he's our starter, when he starts taking every first team rep when we get to training camp, does he start the first preseason game as the starter? Just give me some key kind of target dates and your guesses on some of those big things before what I think we all believe, or most of us believe, will be a week one start at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I actually asked Tavita Pritchard this, I guess like 2 weeks ago, we had access to the assistants. I'm like, is there a point where you're like, okay, on this date, I'm very curious to see, knowing what we're going to be doing, what we're going to, you know, installing or working on in practice. On this date, I am very fascinated to see where Jaden Daniels is. And he said, well, that's a really interesting question. And then remembered he's not the offensive coordinator and said, that's probably a better question for Cliff Kingsbury. So he didn't give me a great answer. Here's my guess. My guess is Jaden Daniels is going to get all the QB1 duties from here on out, unless he has a major setback or something like that. He handled the QB1 duties essentially this last 3 days in minicamp, and I don't really see any reason to think it's going backwards. Like, there's, you know, again, I don't want to assume too much, but I don't really think there's any competition here. Even if Dan Quinn's going to say that, no matter, every time we ask about anybody starting, that's the term they're coming up with, and, you know, it's good coach speak, but I just think Daniels is going to be, you know, the guy going forward. He's got to get the work in. You know, I mean, like last year, you know, Ron Rivera had already sort of pot committed to Sam Howell 10 seconds after the previous season ended. So even though Jacoby Brissett, clearly the more experienced guy, you know, there was never even much of a debate there as what was going to happen here. You know, Mariota, you know, he's obviously more experienced as well, but I don't think anybody's looking at Marcus Mariota as a potential starter, or at least Brissett was sort of, you know, on that line of, if you want to start him, you can. So I don't really, you know, unless it's just sort of quasi for show, or, you know, just to make sure Mariota is prepared as possible should he ever have to play. I just imagine it's Daniels in QB1 in all facets going forward.
You know what's interesting is Jacoby Brissett in New England, and I read in The Athletic, there was kind of a summary. You had one for Washington, and the New England summary is Jacoby Brissett is the starting quarterback. He took every single first-team rep with Drake May there. They're not pushing it with Drake May. There's Jacoby Brissett with another North Carolina quarterback, one that was drafted 3 overall and has one less start than Sam Howell did at the NFL level a year ago. And New England's not messing around. Jacoby Brissett's going to be the starting quarterback in New England. How How about the other rookies? We didn't hear a lot during these OTAs or mandatory minicamp, you know, not since rookie minicamp. But how have the other rookies, shown so far? Obviously, Johnny Newton, not a part of that, and I will ask you for an update. But who stood out? You know, San Ristil, Sinnott, Coleman, McCaffrey, McGee, you know, the Hampton, John Baptiste, maybe even an undrafted free agent. Who were people out there kind of taking notice of?
Yeah, I think Ben Sinnott, he caught my eye a couple times of working in the red zone, catching some passes in that range. You know, his versatility is a huge part of his portfolio, the ability to play not just be a pass catcher, but be a fullback, be a more traditional tight end. And, you know, I do feel like the two tight end set is going to be, you know, I'm not saying necessarily the predominant look, but, you know, when you consider some of the questions on the offensive line, probably a desire to run the ball a fair amount, even if it's just a setup, the play action, having two tight ends can make sense. And, you know, you have Ertz, you have John Bates, but, I think Sinnott, you know, they drafted him for a reason, and I think he's going to be out there, I would think, a decent amount. Jordan McGee, you know, I've said this before, one of the challenges with this offseason program for me compared to others has been there's no baseline out there. I can't assume anything because everything is different. New coaching staff, half the roster is gone.
Right.
So when I'm looking anywhere, I'm like, okay, like last year, do I really have to watch the defensive line a ton? Not really, right? I mean, we kind of know what's going on there. Here, you have to kind of watch everything. So it's kind of hard to see exactly how everybody's doing at all times. But I did notice Jordan McGee a couple of times, you know, in terms of just his when he was moving towards the pocket, being a pretty aggressive player there. And I've heard a lot of good things in general from out, you know, including from people like this, you know, from the pre-draft aspect of it, really like him. So I think Jordan McGee, like, this is a bit of a wild speculation, but knowing he's going to be like the backup for Bobby Wagner, I kind of view him as like sort of the third linebacker right now with Jamin Davis in this sort of, you know,
pass rusher.
I don't know what he is.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually a pretty key deal because if Jamin Davis isn't the third linebacker, I don't really know what his role is exactly and what that even means for him longer, you know, into this season. So McGee, I think, has stood out. I think Sanders still has been, he's shown some good things that, you know, again, with the passing, obviously the defense in general has the edge over offense this early, but in the passing game, you know, when it's just purely a one-on-one, the receivers have an edge. But, you know, I think with Sanders still, you can, you know, see some of the fight, some of the determination with him. That is part of why they drafted a guy like that beyond making plays. So I think those are some of the guys that stood out. I will say there was one play where somebody threw a pass to Armani Rogers over the middle and he caught it and he got thumped. Like, it wasn't like, you know, it's not a play that they're going to have to, the league office is going to cry over excessive hitting, but just like, you know, some contact. And I was like, ooh, who made that one? And it was Dominic Hampton, who to me feels like a poster child for the type of defensive back that this coaching staff is from Dallas, you know, found success with. A guy's got some good size. He and Jeremy Chinn are basically, the physical dimensions are the exact same, 6'3", 220. And, I think that's a guy that they are pretty interested in seeing how it plays out because of their success turning sort of random defensive backs into legit rotation players.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Forrest essentially was picked in the exact same round, right? Somewhere around there. Last regime. But, yeah, I mean, we're talking about fifth-rounders when you're talking about McGee and Hampton. And we see those end up becoming players in the NFL all the time. We're talking to Ben Standig, of course. So you watched that Commander Log episode 3, the draft, the 3-day draft episode, correct?
Yes.
What did you think of it? I talked about it earlier in the show. I thought it was well done. I thought there were, you know, some ways that I mentioned, but I want to hear what yours were.
Yeah, I love those behind the scenes videos. You know, the production was fine. You know, you see things like this and you realize why Hard Knocks doesn't seem to resonate as much anymore, because we get these things from the teams pretty regularly. So, but yeah, I thought it was well done. And, you know, you get some interesting notes here and there about, you know, what they're thinking in the moment. Of course, they're also editing out what they're thinking. We saw nothing about the potential trades into the first round, right, for an offensive tackle. So, you know, who knows what else.
That's true. Good observation. But we had heard that there was interest. Well, I mean, Peters basically implied that, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm saying we saw nothing about how that went
nothing
down.
Nothing on that. Right.
Right. So, you know, it's all, you got to remember the editing.
Oh, that would have been actually the most interesting thing. I totally forgot about that. If they had included the attempt to get back into the first round on night one. I wonder why they excluded that.
Well, you know, I guess probably
you know
they don't
want
to, you know.
Do you know why? Because a player was probably involved.
Well, that, or, you know, they're saying certain things about why they want to do what they want to do, right? I mean, you know, if they're trying to get an offensive tackle, then they're saying, hey, we really got to do this. Or who knows? Also, they ultimately landed on Brandon Coleman, so they did get somebody, and I'm sure they're going to say, you know, he was high on their board and all that stuff. But the fun part there could be if one of the other teams out there that they were talking to puts out their own video and shows how they decided, you know, similar to how we saw Adam Peters interact with Howie Roseman for the trade that did happen. Maybe some of those teams say, we have this opportunity. Do we want to do it or whatever? But I think the thing that was the most interesting to me was sort of seeing everybody in their, I mean, I know they know the camera's on them, but there's too much happening in real time to be acting for the camera. So I think that we got to see a lot of these people kind of be who they are, fill in the role that we perceive them to be. I mean, Adam Peters clearly in charge without question, right? And he's pretty calm, it seems like, in these moments. He's kind of almost like having a good time. Like, you know, he's making jokes. He's freaking everybody out when he says they clearly want to take Sandrastil. He finds out that the team before them is picking a Michigan player, and he tells everybody, yeah, they're taking Michigan defensive tackle. Yeah. He found it so amusing. He did it once to Newmark and Josh Harris. Then he does it again a few minutes later to Dan Quinn, and Dan Quinn like seems like he's going to have a heart attack while it's happening. So I thought that was interesting. You know, the owner aspect, of course, is key here. Josh Harris is in the room. I know there are people who don't even want the owner in the room. That's insane. He owns the team. He's going to be in the room. But Josh Harris was very interested in what is happening. At one point, like, Peters is, you know, talking to another team about something. I think it was maybe a trade in one direction or another. And Harris is asking, so what's the deal now? You're waiting for them to call you back, or do you call them, or how does that work? And then the most notable one was when they're getting ready to draft Ben Sinnott, and Harris says sort of adorably, hey, is there going to be enough, you know, snaps for him to play because we've got Zach Ertz? And it's kind of like, wow, obviously Zach Ertz is at best a one-year deal here, and Ben Sinnott's a longer-term play. But it was, you know, to see the interaction.
Did you refer to that as adorable?
Why?
Because he didn't understand that, you know, that a lot of teams put two tight ends out on the field at the same time.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, prior to a year ago, Josh Harris was a fan of the team. He wasn't owning the team. So he's watching this as many people do. Why, you know, should they do this? How is that going to work? The same people who, you know, again, obviously I'm not comparing Josh Harris to everybody who's emailing you all the time and saying, Kevin, what about this? But like, to an extent, that's kind of how it was, right? I mean, he's a fan of the team. He's not in the team. Now all of a sudden he goes from a fan to being in the literal draft war room. So he's asking, hey, how does this work? And he told us, you know, back when he bought the team or around that time, like, hey, I'm going to be in the room, just like I am with the Sixers and I guess the Devils maybe, but like, I'm not going to be putting my thumb on the scale, but I want to know what's going on. I want these guys to explain it to me. So I just thought it was fun to see that aspect of him. And
You know, I mean, he's in the room. Like, he's hovering, and I say that, it's just because it's what he's doing. I don't mean that in a way in which he's intrusive at all, because that's not what comes out of this 50-minute video out of hours and hours and hours of the draft. But, yeah, I mean, he wants to know what's going on. And I thought Adam Peters does a really good job of being focused, because you got to be focused that night. Things are happening quickly. I mean, when they picked Sanra still and they got him, they're on the clock, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes later with number 53. And, you know, I bet you there's some that would say, Jesus, can we take the owner over here and let him try some of these, you know, these really good brownies that that Mrs. Peters made. But he handled it well. I mean, I thought Adam Peters just came off as a guy that's got some chops in that moment, more so than almost anybody else in the room.
Yeah, no, he just looks very smooth and very comfortable. And, you know, I know we focus so much on...
Soft-spoken, by the way. Soft-spoken.
Yeah, I know we focus typically on, we judge these GMs by, like, you know, the moves that they actually make. But there is something to be said for being, you know, we talk about being leader of men, but like being the tone setter of the situation. You know, he is, putting the owner aside, Adam Peters is the one, the top of the overall Washington Commanders football, tree right now, whatever. He's the one setting the tone, including for the coach. Now, Dan Quinn's in charge of the football side, but it's Adam Peters who's, whether it's showing calm as he did or if it's showing tension, that's going to be felt through everybody else and trickle down. So he does a good job of, as we see in this video, of being in the moment, not, you know, he's taking it seriously, but he's also still finding times to make some jokes, whatever, and to be, and it also, you know, seemed to be a pretty inclusive deal. It's not just him and Lance Newmark huddling up the whole time. It's, you know, he's talking to this, talking to that. Yes. They bring Kingsbury over at one point,
right,
which is also to show that Kingsbury is involved, but not too involved with this. So I think Peters definitely, from a tone setting standpoint, did a really good job. Obviously, we'll see over time if the execution worked, but in terms of what was happening in the moment, yeah, he seemed to be, it was a pretty good look for him, I thought.
Yeah, there's a very, with Peters, I mean, this was noticeable in his first interview. There's a very kind of Northern California, Silicon Valley kind of attitude. And, you know, for the lack of a better description, polish, I would say, as well, to him. Let me just, your observation was the best one. And clearly there's probably a lot of video on Washington, you know, trying to trade back up into the first round to take, you know, a tackle in the draft. That would have been interesting to see. But I think, you know, your point is a good one. It's not just, you know, it's not just if maybe a player is going to be involved in the trade. You would not want that player to know. But it's that, hey, we're desperate for a left tackle. And, the, you know, what does that say about, you know, Lucas and the rest of them? So I guess, but we could see that somewhere else. We could see that on, who was, I'm trying to think, who were they talking to? Do you remember who they were talking to in the first round? Because the last tackle taken was the Arizona kid that you're, no, the Oklahoma kid that you said before the draft they liked.
Yeah, Tyler Guyton went to Tyler Dallas Guyton. After Dallas traded down a little bit. I had heard they went all the way up into the, like, sort of the middle of the first round to try to talk to a team or two, and then, you know,
was
sort
it
of
Mims, the guy from who was it that you think they were targeting? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, Mims to me was the one that made the most sense, because just listening to teams talk about him, it was like, okay, he hasn't played a ton, but what we've seen is pretty outlandish, and that seemed to be the guy that made the most sense, where the other lineman after him is where he started getting more questions of, you know, can they play tackle ultimately, and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, I think Mims was the one that made sense to me, and that's why moving in potentially the middle of the first round, because, right, he ultimately went to the Bengals, right, I think that's right, at 18. So that's one of those where it seemed very plausible that may be what happened. So, yeah, I think him, but, yes, if they continue to look into trading in the first round, which it sounds like they did, then you're looking at your Guyton's and your Jordan Morgans as well.
Did you pick up on that right before the McCaffrey pick? You know, when Cameron Kitchens gets picked by the Rams, and he says, Adam Peters says, they didn't make it any easier. They both play the way we want them to play. I'm wondering if that guy Kitchens hadn't been picked at 99 and he were available at 100, if he would have been the pick. I don't know. But I thought that was an interesting thing, too. Like, they had a couple of players there, including McCaffrey, that they seemed to be interested in.
Yeah, and this is why, even though the Hard Knocks thing is heavily edited as well, this is why having an outside company do it, to an extent, I say outside, I mean, you know, it's still the NFL, but like having somebody outside of the team's own editors put this thing together, because right, there was at least once or twice where they mentioned possibly like eyeing like two different players at a pick, but yeah, we never hear who the other one is. And, right, you know, that's the stuff that is as interesting as anything else.
So I agree.
For our purposes, to compare, well, they could have had this, they could have gone down this road, and they didn't, or what have you. So, yeah, so it would be great if we had that, but
Sanders still, they were super excited about, but I don't think there's any doubt, because you see the exchange between Lance Newmark and Adam Peters when the Falcons take the defensive tackle from Clemson at 35, and they know they're going to get Johnny Newton, because that really was clearly a guy, when they entered night two, they're like, if this guy's there at 36, we're going to feel like we stole one. And I think they feel like they did. Now he's hurt, and we'll see what happens in terms of readiness for training camp. But I thought that just confirmed what we all thought, which was this was clearly the highest guy on their board at that moment, and they were really excited that he was there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that you know, again, some of this can occasionally feel manufactured, but this one, based on what we had already known and yeah, what we see, didn't. And there was, right, there was even some talk we saw in film about them even considering trading up, but ultimately, obviously, playing it out and citing they didn't have to. So, yeah.
Well, I thought the conversation was with Roseman at 36. There, obviously, the conversation with Roseman at 40, which was the one that results in Adam Peters saying, you're a pain in the ass. But at 36, I think they might be on the phone with Roseman, too, who's trying to get up. But they want – because that's when he says, no, we're going to stick here and make the pick. If Newton had gone at 35 – to Atlanta, maybe Washington would have dealt 36 to Philadelphia. That's the way I took it. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, that was in play too. By the way, like, you know, we focused so much on Atlanta's draft because of the Michael Penix pick. You know, I had forgotten that they took a defensive tackle before,
right,
Johnny Newton, which, you know, again, we'll see over time, but in terms of just the pre-draft rankings, that was, you know, Newton was being viewed as a,
right,
you know, sort of late first, early second.
Well, maybe Atlanta knew about the foot injury.
Maybe. I mean, look, obviously everybody has their own,
yeah,
opinions and what they're looking to do on defense. Maybe this other guy was a better fit. But, yeah, just in terms of positioning, Newton was, at, you know, seemingly the whole time, right, rated as, you know, top 2-3 defensive tackle.
All right, I got to go. Real quickly, actually, Newton, in time for training camp or not?
They've said it's unclear, so
okay.
I have no idea, but obviously, they're going to take their time with it one way or the other.
I got to roll. Thanks.
See ya.
All right, Ben Standing, everybody. You're going to hear Eric Flack from WUSA Channel 9 next on this D.C. sports study, which was done to determine the economic viability of bringing a stadium back to D.C. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, theteam980.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.